Museum of the Moving Image welcomes you to the Pinewood Dialogues Online, an archive of conversations with innovative creative figures in film, television, and digital media. Visit Museum of the Moving Image in New York City or online at www.movingimage.us.
Please welcome Harmony Korine.
Yo, what up, New York?
Well, welcome, and congratulations on this film. It's like so many different things. I mean, like, I was sort of struck at how beautiful it was, and I kept thinking, like, while I was watching it, that it's really, like, sweet in a way. Like, it's just sort of not what I expected. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it does. It has some sweetness in there. But yeah. It has some sweetness in there.
What was your thing? In different ways, right? Yeah. Different meanings of the word.
Yeah, it also depends who you are.
Yeah, right. But I guess, well, first of all, did you go to spring break? Well, you grew up in Nashville, so you were sort of not that far from spring break land. Did you go yourself? Or?
I never went. I was, like, skateboarding and stuff. And I also, like, grew up around a lot of kids that were epitomized that. And so in some ways I was trying to get away from that. And then... but yeah, it was real common. I mean, when I was, I don't know, I mean, you guys probably know, but what spring break is, but yeah, when I was like, in high school in the early 90s, it was like Redneck Riviera, and just kids would like load up in their cars and drive. It was more of a white person's thing, at the time. It was like real super Caucasian, and like, now it's more multicultural, it's more interesting. But yeah, then it was just like mostly white, and like kids would just go get in fights and like lose their virginity and like do drugs and like come back and pretend it didn't happen.
And, you know, how did the film sort of formulate in your mind? It's sort of a leap from Trash Humpers in some ways, you know?
I'd been collecting like spring break imagery for a couple of years, and like, I was using it more for like artwork and things, make paintings or just like, you know, I just like sometimes I just like have files of images and just certain things and cultural phenomenons or just whatever, like haircuts or just things. And then I was like interested. I started looking at them all together, and it was almost like the subject matter was very like hypersexualized, hyperviolent, and then everything around it was really kind of. Was really kind of childlike, and all the nail polish and the swim and like the bikinis and like the Hello Kitty book bags and the the vaporizers and the puke. Everything looked like almost like a coded language. And I'd been culling all these images from like fraternity message board sites and like co-ed pornography, just like all this stuff. And it started to speak to me in a way. It started to the details was exciting, and I thought, well, I don't know, you know, it's hard to explain, but then you just feel like maybe there's something there.
So obviously, there's a few like kind of keys to the film. One is the casting. I mean, it's not just that you got stars and that helped to make the movie or sell the movie, but it really affects how we see the movie to be seeing Selena Gomez and you know, like my 11-year-old son is like probably watching her tonight on Nickelodeon or whatever show she's on.
Yeah. Yeah, that was exciting for me, honestly, because I want like your 11-year-old kid to see it.
My 11-year-old kid.
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
So that was exciting to me, because I wanted them to be introduced to a lot of the ideas and images and things that you see in there. You know, it wasn't a conceptual stunt, but there was something. I like the idea that in some ways those girls are representative in real life of this kind of pop mythology, and they're kind of connected culturally to that world in some ways. And so, I thought it brought a whole other layer in a lot of different ways. And I wanted the film to have that whole sense of working in multiple ways, like. Taking base culture, things that are considered like totally retarded and completely like depleted of any type of soul or merit, and then finding something poetic and maybe even interesting in there. It's fun for me. So I like the idea of your daughter going.
So speaking of which, I read that Selena Gomez, like, to cast, this was like a big leap for them to take these roles, but I understand that Selena Gomez's mother is a big fan of your films.
Yeah, that was crazy.
So that must have helped.
Like, her mom was younger than me, which was like trippy. And so, but yeah, like I told a story before, but like when I was starting the casting lady, she's like, "Who do you want to be in the film?" I was like, "Oh, just let's get Selena Gomez, would be the best." And then I got this email like, "Okay, she's flying into Nashville to audition in your living room tomorrow." And I was like, "What the fuck?" And like, I didn't know anything about her or any, you know, I don't really know any of the personal stuff. I thought maybe she was religious. And like, I started flipping artwork over and like
redecorating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But it went. So how did you work with, what was it like working with them? There's always been this thing in your films where you have a mixture of kind of documentary, sort of blending different types of performances. I mean, Gummo had that. You're throwing your actors into documentary situations. What was it like?
Well, it's fun for me. I don't know. It's just like, that's what I like to do. I mean, it's like, again, it's not even that I'm trying to create a reality. I hope people understand that. Like, I'm not really, never have been interested in truth. Like, there's sometimes this kind of idea that, like, the films are somehow, like a truth or something that is, I'm trying to make some type of an indictment or some type of anti-indictment or something. But I'm not, I don't care about what's real. I'm trying to go for something that's unreal.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to go for something that's more important than truth, which is like a kind of a transcendence, or something that's more enlightening, like more like a feeling, or something that's less tangible or more difficult to articulate. And so it's always this sense of like going past the simple articulation and into something that's more like a margin of the undefined. And so the acting and the style and the way I try to make movies reflects that, and that it's sometimes looks real, but I'm always pushing it into something hyper real and manipulating. I'm trying to make it an impressionistic reinterpretation of that, or like this movie, I always was designed to be like a pop poem, you know?
Yeah. But that there's so many different like tensions in the film between beauty and.
All right. So I used to call it, when I first started, I called it a mistake, a art form. And what I meant was that I was interested in mistakes and a kind of randomness and the jaggedness of life and things. And so it was like putting these different components, or you could say documentary elements, within things that were really fabricated and stylized, and all these types of kind of random things, and then shaking them up and documenting explosion. And that's kind of what, it's never improvised, but it's always manipulated in a way, or it's like music. It's like jamming off of an idea.
Yeah, but there's something a little avant-garde about it, and it's not in a pretentious way, but I feel like what you're doing is like making us see things in a different way. Like, you know, when we are experiencing that incredible opening montage in the film, it's not, it's like so different than watching Girls Gone Wild or something, but you're like, it's really heightening your perception.
Yeah. And it's weird because I like a lot of things in Girls Gone Wild. And so like, I hope that also comes off.
Oh, I think that does. Yeah.
I think, you know what I mean? Like, I actually enjoy that stuff a lot. So, anyway.
Could you talk a little bit about the, I did want to ask you also about the sense of place, because even though you're talking about it being unreal, like, there's such a vivid sense of place. And I know that you, I guess I read that you were, like, when you're writing the film, you were staying in one of these, like, you know, disgusting motels. So, well, I don't know, can you talk about that?
Yeah, when Franco said he wanted to play Alien, I hadn't written the script yet. I just described it to him, wrote some things, and it was right before he was hosting the Oscars. And then I jumped on an airplane, and I flew to Daytona Beach, and I just checked into a motel. But like, when I looked around out the window, there was nothing but like bikers and like obese women and like kids, and like, it was just disgusting. Now, not that there's anything wrong with being obese, but I mean, if you are, I guess. But you know what I'm saying? It was like as if like Subway sandwiches or Dunkin' Donuts were God and they designed the world. That's what it would look like. And then there was no Spring Breakers, and I spoke to this woman. She was a weightlifter. She was selling postcards, and she said they ran them out like years ago, and they moved to Panama City. So I just jumped in a car. I was like, later, and then it was like ground zero for Spring Break, Panama City. It was all the stuff you would see blasting Taylor Swift all night long, and people puking, having sex in the hallways, trying to kick your door down. The whole hotel was rattling. And then I tried to write there, but it was hard. So I moved to another place on the Strip, and it was just as bad. And then finally, this is a true story. I drove like 20 miles outside to a Marriott hotel on a golf course. And I walk in, and it's just a sea of dwarfs. And I was like, what's up with this place? And the lady was like, Hulk Hogan is doing a reality show here. And so at night, it would just be all these dwarfs drinking champagne and smoking cigars on a hot tub. But so I liked writing there because I wanted to get out so quickly that it made me write it like in a week. It was like a perfect environment.
Right. But you write like you don't go with a finished script. I mean, what I'm getting at is that you sort of leave a lot open to what you find.
Yeah, I mean, it's finished. I just don't care about it. Like, it's just like the script is not important to me. The script is just important enough that I can get the actors and I can get the money, and then that's it. I've never done a rewrite. I don't care about it. It's just not interesting to me. Scripts are just nothing. It's just like they hold the ideas, which is a starting off point,
yeah,
and a base, and maybe it's just the fabric, just the beginning, like the kernel. But then I just have no interest. You know, I just look at it. It's just paper. I just don't care.
Yeah. I want to ask you two more things, and we'll open it up to the audience for questions. So one is sort of the structure of the film, that it goes from being sort of a teen movie, you know, to the crime element becomes more and more important as we get into the film. I mean, especially as James Franco's character is introduced. I'm just wondering how that evolved.
Like, I never actually wanted the movie to be like a like when people talk about a Spring Break movie. I was more interested in Spring Break, maybe just it's kind of fleeting in the film, really. It's like 10 minutes of the movie. It's more of a backdrop and more of this idea of a dream and a kind of metaphor for what happens later. But I was more interested in the world, Franco's world, and this kind of like Florida beach noir, this type of kind of sinister. When I was a kid, when I was going to visit my grandparents in Florida, it was a weird place. Everyone seemed like they're on the witness protection program. And, you know, because it was just like people go there because it's the sun and there's these dreams, you know, the dream of the sun. And like, but then it's just doesn't work out. And then people like go back into the shadows. And I always felt like there was violence in there. And so I wanted it to be more like that, more about that trap, you know, the trap house, which is where he lives in that whole world. So I don't know. I was just drawn to it.
We were talking a little bit about Miami Vice because we were upstairs looking at the costumes from the TV show. But the film, the Michael Mann film, you know, it must have been an influence.
Yeah, I love it. I don't really watch movies. When I make films, I for like probably about a year before I make movies, I stop watching films. And I don't even really watch movies that much in general anymore. When I was a kid, I really was very voracious. But I slowed down and started to become more inward in some ways. And the only film I really watched was the Michael Mann movie, the Miami Vice movie, which I really love. I would watch it without the sound because it's so textural. It's like really it's physical, and it's about colors to me, and a type of like even an ambience and a tone, which is like is important to me to make a film that's this culture is very much about a culture of surfaces and the way things look, and then all the kind of ideas from the characters and the storyline is the residue of that. So that was something, and also because it was a Florida film, and I love that movie.
So the last thing I want to ask you, and then we'll open it up, is about the editing of the film, because that is like so extraordinary to me. It's just, you know, it's obvious how good it looks. It's an amazing looking film, but the editing is just really special and amazing. So I just wondering if you could talk about that. And I read that you love that process of filmmaking, you know, part of it.
Yeah, I love editing. It's control. I love shooting too when it's not a bitch. And it's a lot of times it's a bitch. I don't really enjoy myself shooting because I just never let myself get comfortable, you know, because there's always something more I could do. So when people talk about like how it looked like a fun movie, I'm like, well, it's hell. I was like, oh, look, girls in bikinis and shit. Eyes as hell. But it always is that way because I always want more. Like, I always want more. But in editing is, I love it because it's controlled and I can experiment. And so, again, like, when I, Doug Chris, the editor, we had like a team of editors, and so what I said in the beginning was that I didn't want to make a movie that was a simple film. I wanted it to be something that I started to describe it as a liquid narrative, something that was more about an energy and an exploded narrative or something. At its core, it's a very simple story, but around it, I wanted it to basically be without any specific times. It's more like about capturing a certain kind of energy, and then it became more like music. And so we started to think of the film in terms of music, in terms of almost like electronic music or something loop-based music. That's why the film has a lot of repetition and things that come back and work on you in that way. And even the some of the poetry or the singing of the things that people say, I was like, you know, it'd be cool to make a film or to have that where it's almost like hypnotic in like a way that like pop music has hooks and choruses and things that get stuck in your brain. So then I'd been working on this type, stylistically. I've been trying to get to this place for a long time. This idea of like micro scenes is what I used to say. Mm-hmm. So the micro scenes, like I don't want anything to be, I actually don't want like scenes. I want just the whole thing to be like a single entity, a piece of like energy.
Yeah.
And so it took a while to figure that out, to get into it. Once you started to get a couple of scenes, I was like, that's it. And then the movie started to, then it was just like, bam. And you're just like jamming.
Yeah. Okay, let's open it up, and I'll repeat questions just so people can hear. So right over here.
Working with James Franco, who's such a versatile actor, what was the process like creating Alien, and how much of it was you versus James?
So working with James Franco, what was the process like creating Alien? How much was you versus James?
Yeah, I mean, James is crazy. He's a real freak, you know, and he's awesome. He's amazing. I mean, he just never sleeps. He's just always, I mean, all that stuff you guys hear about him is true. like, he's unbelievable. So with his character, Alien, I want it is based on, it's kind of an amalgamation of a lot of kids I knew growing up, going to school, like riding the bus with, and like, you know, kids used to bang on the table and rap, like white kids. That had kind of taken on black mannerisms, regional, like southern, you know. And so what I would do is I would basically send him hundreds of clips. It was for a year. He was doing other things. Since I would just send him clips, audio clips of certain rappers. I like there's all these rappers in Memphis in the 90s, Tommy Wright and some of the guys from 3-6 Mafia and all these people. I just love their voices. And so I would just send him clips of things. And I'd just say, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. He would never respond. And like, I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, just ignoring it. And I would send him like, videotape. I would send him like, I would go onto like fight websites and send him clips of like, you know, girls in parking lots beating the shit out of each other. And like, I wouldn't really give him any explanation. I would just send him this stuff. And like, I would just kind of like, I wanted it to be like a filter, like a mood, like a long mood piece, and like let him kind of, yeah, like filter it, like a cultural, like some type of cultural sponge or something. Yeah. But again, I didn't know, and he's not really into rehearsing in that tradition. You know, he doesn't really like to do too much rehearsal. And so but I'm crazy about like details and things. So before he's shooting, I spend months alone in the locations, just driving around alone or with the production designer or something, just getting lost and stuff and finding neighborhoods and things. And so I had him come out a month before, and then I would just late at night, we'd get in the car, and I just roll the windows down, and we would just drive through like the hood, or just drive through wherever, and just like, and I'd just say, "This is where you're from," or like, "This is what, you know, this is where you grew up," or "This is where." And he wouldn't say anything; he would just like, you know, drink a Diet Coke and stare out the window. And and then like the first day when he got into it, put his cornrows on and his teeth, and then I was like, holy shit. Like, and then I heard his voice and everything, and I was like, man, he got it. Like, he's been paying attention. And then he just, for the entirety of the film, he pretty much was Alien.
Wow. Okay, let's go all the way in the back there. Yeah. So did you feel uncomfortable directing those party scenes since you didn't have the experience of
– Well, like when I say uncomfortable, I just mean like I'm always like – I never comfortable because there's always like more you can do. Like I'm never satisfied with like – I shoot like up until like point where they're like pulling me off. Like I never like – I never can stop because it's just never enough. Like I just want images from everywhere, every direction. Like I just want it to never stop. I want – and so – And so that's why it's hard. I mean, those sequences were chaos, like those with the kids and stuff. And we would just get empty. We would fortunately we found like empty motels where the owners were cool, and they were like, "Yeah, just let them destroy it." And like, and then that's what we did. And then I would just get thousands of kids, and you know, from fraternities and some on spring break and Hooters or wherever the hell. And then like that, and it was chaos. So by its very definition, it's chaos. So it's difficult, but it's thrilling too.
Okay, right here.
What tips would you have to aspiring directors?
Okay, so what tips do you have for aspiring directors?
All right, this is a good question. Listen to me closely. I'm just kidding. All right, honestly, here's what I would say. I would say you have to be bold. I would say to aspiring directors who want to make films that are like legit, like you want to do something, I would say always think about it in terms of extra. This is like my belief that there's already so much out there, right? So I think extra. So I think like, okay, I'm going to make a movie about this and this is what's going to happen, but then what's extra? Like where am I going to, and then when I find out what's extra, I go, okay, what's extra? So then I'm always trying to go to what's extra, extra, extra. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would say you can't care too much about what people say. I say you have to I talk to Herzog about this all the time, and ultimately I say it over and over again. You have to be a foot soldier in the army. That is the most important thing. That if you're going to make real films, you have to have some type of you can't waver. Like, you know, someone says you're great, awesome. Someone says you suck, great. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you have to have a purpose and a drive, and you have to believe in yourself above and beyond anything that anybody tells you. Now, I'm only saying this if you're trying to make something that's special. But if you're trying to make things that everyone else makes, then you can just do what everyone else does. But I'm trying to say if you want to go and be an extra human being, you have to put it in extra work. And so you might have – sorry if I'm going on, but it's – you know, you might have long patches of real misery, right? Like real just horror in your life and rejection and just horror and just darkness. But just embrace that, you know what I mean? And like use that. And in the end, you'll have victory. You'll be a great person and make great films.
Okay, right down here. Oh, so the film is rated R. Is there an unrated version lurking out there, I guess?
You mean like a more extreme R version? There were things that I couldn't put in the film because they probably would be more too extreme, but like, I didn't want to make pornography. I don't mind pornography, but I didn't want the film to veer into like pornography. And like I felt like it was a kind of, this was the line that I felt comfortable, or I felt like it needed to be walked, if that makes sense. So there's like things that are maybe more graphic that I didn't put in, but it wasn't because I was necessarily worried about the rating or anything, but it was more just, it didn't seem like it needed it, really.
So how are you thinking about the film in terms of audience? Because it really is sort of becoming a cultural phenomenon, this film, and it's being talked about on network shows. And we were saying before, like, it was on ESPN. They were talking about it. They don't usually mention movies.
Yeah, it's crazy. My brother was like, you're next to LeBron James. What the hell is going on? I mean, I love it. It's great. I hope everyone sees it. I mean, shit. It's like, you know, you make the movie for I make films. There's always this misconception or this idea that you make films and you want in a specific way that only certain people should see or be able to understand. I never liked the idea of my film having to qualify yourself to see the movies or having to like even get the movies. It's more of an experience. And so it's very exciting to me after making movies for all this time that like your daughter's going to see it tomorrow.
Right there. Yeah. Okay, so could you talk about working with Selena Gomez and what was surprising?
She's great. She's amazing. I mean, I didn't know much about her. I didn't know much about her personal life and all that stuff. She's amazing. She's like, whatever you can say about Disney, and I don't really know much about Disney either, but like, they still like, those girls are like, you know, tough. And she was like down for it. You know, there's a lot of chaos and a lot of fanaticism that follows her and some of the other girls, like, you know, shit I've never seen before. I mean, I was like, what the fuck? I mean, people hiding in floorboards and, like, I had, like, tween kids, like, you know, with signs in front of my condo. Whoa, what's going on? But she has a lot to contend with. There's so much energy. When there's that much energy around you as a human being, it's, like, crazy, you know. But she's very... I can't speak highly enough for her. She was, you know, she took a risk with this movie, and like, I'm grateful to her. She was amazing.
Okay, over here, then we'll go back up. So yeah, can you talk about the sound? Do you think about that in the writing process? Or does it come in later on?
Like, I just dream about it always.
Yeah.
Like, I never not think about it. Like, I just, that's like what I think about all the time, is the sound, is the feeling that you're going to get in the movie. So, like, I want the film to be like, I want it to, you never to get really comfortable. I want it to be like relentless in that way, or something that you're not, almost like trance. Like, or to be honest with you, I want the films to almost work like a drug. To replicate some type of a drug experience. That's ultimately like what I want more than anything, is that they have some type of a peak, a transcendence, like a peak moment, and almost a hallucinatory quality, and then they kind of disappear very quickly, and they're gone, and you're left with something. You're left maybe changed in some way that you're not even aware of. And so the sound, you know, it's in movies, it's everything, right? It's why it's the greatest medium. It's because it's sight and sound, and it can create something physical, something that's like tangible. And so with the sound is equal to the image. And so with this movie, I wanted it completely bombastic and very like, and guttural, like bass. Like, I love bass. Like, so all I listen to is like rap music, and I love, like, sometimes just listen to bass, repetitive thuds over and over again. I just drive around listening to like a bass with not even rap, just, and like sometimes I'll unscrew the my speakers in the back so that they rattle, and because I just love the rattle. It's like a bomb. And I just want the film to have that effect, the sound calling.
Okay, all the way in the back. That's a little hard to read from here, but
it has a cum stain on it. I can see.
You have great eyesight. Right? Making the films, is there anything about making films that scares you, or that, you know, evokes that emotion in you?
It's an interesting question. I think I have a warped brain, because like I don't really get scared of anything, like pretty much anything. So I don't get scared. Like, I just like watch and I get excited. So I don't get scared. Maybe like, you mean like, only time I get scared is I think like maybe there's someone in that pool hall has a gun and is going to shoot you or something, but not really. I don't really, I don't know. I don't get scared. I get like I could feel an energy and I'm like, whoa, something great's going to happen. A lot of times other people around me are scared and I think, wow, something great's going to happen.
Can you talk about, oh, I wanted to ask about the scene with James Franco in, you know, with the two guns in his mouth. I mean, that's an interesting scene and that evolved from what I understand.
Yeah, so that scene was a funny, it was the filleting scene. Yeah, that was a, it was really just written up into a point where the girls scare him or they just put the gun up to his head and they kind of turn the tables on him a little bit and kind of try to fuck with his head. And then we started doing rehearsals. We did rehearse that scene and Franco did rehearse that scene and before shooting. And like, I noticed that like the way they would hold the gun, it was like kind of sexual and it was like right in his, it just, I wasn't directing them. I was just watching it. They stick it like right on his lip. And I was like, and I just said, I was like real, I just said, wait, he's just sticking his mouth. Yeah. And then they are all right. And then they stuck in his mouth and then we did it again and then again. And then he got more comfortable within his mouth and like, and they got more comfortable. And then I said, well, this is kind of great. You know, why don't you like emasculate him and make, you know, and kind of like, and like, you know, make him suck it off. And then they were like, whoa. And James was into it. But James is like, you know, again, he's another person. He's hard to freak out. And so I thought that's where the scene ended. And then I looked at James and he just got a smile on his face. And he goes, and he was like, I should fucking suck the guns off and love it. And I was like, yes. And like, and it crystallized in that moment. It found itself. It became the core of the movie in some ways because in that moment it was a love. It was like a kind of sociopathic love. Like they, you know, they say game recognizes game, and like they all recognized each other's game in that moment, and so it became something greater than what I'd imagined.
Okay, we'll just take a few more. So over here.
Gucci Mane, I called him, he was in prison, and like, you know, I love him, he's like one of my favorite rappers ever, and like, you know, he is the real deal, he's like, he's just my favorite, and so I called his manager, Coach K, and like, I was like, Coach, I need to talk to Gooch, and then he's like, all right, Gooch in jail, and then he's like, but we can call him from this time to this time, and like... And then I was like, Gooch, and I was on so excited. It was like probably the greatest phone call for me. And I said, if you could stay out of prison, I got a part for you. And he was like, I'm down, man. I'll do it. and then he did. He stayed out of prison. He hasn't reoffended since. He's going to be at the premiere in L.A. on Thursday.
Great. Okay. Right there.
Faces. Just
well, question about the use of close-ups. Yeah, was there any?
Yeah. Faces. Sure. I love faces. No, I do. I love faces. Like face. I love the movie Faces. But I love faces. I'm always looking at great faces. Not. I mean, like even in older films, like some of my favorite things are. You know, the secondary or even like the third back actor in the back, their faces is just, faces are great.
You love masks too. And I mean, I understand it was like this image
you
of
love
the
masks.
Well, yeah, but the image of the girls in the bikinis and the, yeah, the hats. Like, I mean,
oh, yeah.
Like was like one of the first things that came to you in the film?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. With the girls, no, I just thought that loving masks is perverted. The image with the, oh yeah, so basically that was the first image of the movie. I just dreamt up girls in bikinis with ski masks. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like prosthetic masks, faces. Yeah. Oh, never mind.
that was trash.
Masks, yeah. It was from the, you know, the, I don't know if you, Young Buck, this rapper, he has an album cover where he's wearing a ski mask and he's got a grill. And I was looking at it, I thought, I love that image. And I thought, what if you had girls in bikinis robbing like fat tourists on the beach? And with guns, and that was the first image. Yeah. It's like neon bikinis, masks, unicorn patches, silencers.
I just want to ask you sort of a last thing. You mentioned Werner Herzog, who's been a big like supporter of you since Gummo. I'm just wondering what you guys talk about, because you both sort of do... you both like create amazing images and like try to break through in a way. I think you're both involved in like, you know, how do you make films in a world where there's so many images and you want to do something? You talked about Extra, but yeah. Do something that breaks through.
I mean, you know, he's in some ways like my filmic father.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean that like that the movies are alike or where I just mean that like in a way that, my dad loved movies, and so when I was young, my dad would show me his films, and immediately I was drawn to the wildness and the poetry of his films, and so, like in a way that I had never felt before. When I saw Even Dwarf Started Small when I was a kid, and I just was like, what the fuck is that? And like, how could that even exist? And what type of human could put that together? Like, it seemed like it just came from, you know, like outer space. And at the same time, it was based and grounded in something soulful. And so I guess in some ways, like I felt very similar watching like Buster Keaton movies or Marx Brother films, a similar thing working. And then, and Werner, I just saw him in Rome last week. You know, he was like one of the first people when he saw Gummo, even before it came out in the theaters, he called me up and he said, "You're the last foot soldier in the army. It is your duty to make movies." But he's he is the most bold. And so for me, it's great because you need somebody sometimes to like look at and say that person is, you know, because he's like a warrior.
Yeah. Well, you'll have a lot of 11-year-olds watching your films and feeling the same.
Yeah.
So anyhow...
anything else? Should we get anything while I'm here?
Okay, go ahead.
Take
a few more. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. What's up with My Little Pony?
You tell me. Shit. I don't know. I just like it. I thought, you know, it's cute. My sister used to watch it. It was like a little, you know, it's cute, right? Oh, it became like a theme or something. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't do anything on accident. I mean, I'm not making the film on accident. We're accidentally watching My Little Pony? No. I mean, they could, though, but they weren't. No, it was something like we had to get. And, you know, it's always a hassle. Yeah, I did.
Okay, right down here. Oh. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, the morphing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that sequence where you see the image morphing and dissolving, how did that come about?
That was like I didn't use a ton of it, but on the camera, the camera was using, we were using all these Japanese novelty cameras simultaneously. I was like six or seven. I built like a totem with cameras that were these small cameras, and that I would put them on different settings. And so I wasn't sure how I wanted to use them in the film or if I could use them. And then I had this editor, assistant editor on the film, who started playing around on the Avid with just a kind of these composites of all that footage, and it's like a morphing. It's kind of this analog morphing. And I thought, whoa, that's cool. Like that. In some ways, it's kind of trippy. It's like a drug. You know, it's a punctuation in some of the drug scenes. Yeah.
Okay, right up there. Go ahead. Do you ever try to add danger to a set?
Well, let's put it this way. I don't know if danger is the right, but like I make it if generally, as a rule, if I'm bored at any point in the shooting of it, then it's going to be boring for me. So I definitely in editing as well. Like I don't really like use anything that I get bored. Even in writing, like that's why a lot of times people say my films aren't linear or they aren't, because I take out the parts that are the logic parts or the parts that are like, you know, you need this to get to here, but those parts suck. Like, so why can't I just be here all the time? And like, and so when I make films, it's like that. Sometimes you could say it's danger, because like, I don't want to film like in places where it's just white people, you know, like it's just like, if there's too many white people, it sucks, you know? So like, you just wanted things to be exciting.
Okay, over here. Could you talk about how you got actors and collaborators from so many different backgrounds to work with you?
I'm Harmony.
That's a good answer. Just yeah, why not?
Call them up.
That's exactly the right answer. Yeah, that's true.
What was the question?
Working with a cinematographer.
Freedom. I mean, I don't know if freedom's the right word because I don't like that. But I work with great cinematographers. I try to. And Benoit Deby is one of the best, and he's the most inventive. Maybe the most inventive cinematographer there is, and so in the beginning you start to develop all these ideas. It's like painting, you know. You say these are the colors. Like I would say, I want the room to seem like it's lit with Skittles, you know, or I want like the lights to be like starbursts. I feel like it's candy, you know, and he you know, he's Belgian, and he would just kind of like okay, and that's it. And then he would just go for it, and he would interpret it through in his way. And, you know, I wanted the camera always kind of moving and floating and dropping. I never wanted it to be comfortable or to be, you know, too static. And so, my closest relationships on film are with my cinematographer. That's me. More than the actors or more than producers or anyone. It's usually always my cinematographer. I have my deepest relationship. You do speed and photography?
I
used to do that.
High speed.
Oh, Phantom, yeah. We shot that on some of that, yeah. Oh. Oh, so sorry. Oh, thanks. Yeah, like if you're going to use a Phantom, I don't know if you guys know what Phantom is. It's a super high-speed camera. It's like ultra, ultra fast. So it makes everything so you can go slow. You can like do like, you know, you can like 1 second, like 10 minutes or something if you wanted to. With that type of thing, it's done beforehand. And, you know, we would decide if it's something we could do in just a regular camera, if we can do it with just a normal 35mm camera, or if it's something that we wanted to go really slow. We would use a Phantom. I love Phantoms. It's almost cheating. It makes everything looks cool. Like Phantoms, almost just like you can just walk and it looks cool.
Okay, over here.
Damn, you got blue balls. Admit it. Yeah. I can tell. I can see in your eyes. Blue balls. What? Letting you release it. No, that's it. Like, I wanted you to be pent up in you. No, I mean, that's it. Yeah, I wanted to be. I mean, you want to get the puss in the beginning? Come on, you got to wait. It's better that way.
Well, nobody knows how to follow that one. So, okay, well, go ahead.
I love them all. I have no allegiance to anything. I mean, I love film. Film is my favorite as far as just, like, this is film. Film is the greatest as far as just, it's romance. It's like soft edges. It's the most possibility. I love that you can break the image down in a way that you can't break video down. People say you can, but you really can't. film is it's texture. It's like it is soulful. The way the colors work, the way the grain works, it's like it's the most beautiful. Now, having said that, I also love all types of video. There, I always say that there's no allegiance to technology. That it's that they're instruments. They each have a tone, a sound, and they're useful. So I like the worst, crappiest video, VHS, you know, crap. And I love the way that looks. And I think it's just as aesthetic as 70 millimeter.
Yeah, well, Trash Empress was beautiful in its way.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just what you consider beautiful, right? So
yeah.
It's all like somebody sees like a huge obese woman and loves that. Someone sees an anorexic and loves that. And someone sees someone in between and loves that. Same with film, video.
Okay. Okay, we'll do one more over here. Yeah. The Britney Spears montage. Can you talk about that? How did you?
I just been like, I love that song so much, and I thought it was like a lot of ways. It was like the rest of the movie. It was like this kind of pop. It was really like airless and kind of poppy and morose in some ways. And then, but underneath it, it was like violent, or there was something kind of like, you know. Scary about it. And so I, for years and years, I'd been wanting to make that sequence. I'd been holding that song and that idea for a long time. It was the first time I could do it was in this film. It was something I'd been carrying for a long time.
Okay. Well, the film opens Friday.
Thanks everybody.
And thanks a lot for being here tonight.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. The Pinewood Dialogues at Museum of the Moving Image are made possible by generous support from the Pannonia Foundation. To learn more about the museum, visit www.movingimage.us.